Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And as you may know, President-elect Donald Trump was supposed to hold a news conference today to discuss how he plans to address potential conflicts of interest associated with his large network of businesses across the globe. But the president-elect has now delayed this news conference until next month. It's not clear if before or after the inauguration, citing the task of filling out his cabinet as a higher and complicated priority. As close as we came to hearing any version of what they have in mind today was this from his aide Kellyanne Conway on Morning Joe on MSNBC.
They have assured everyone, Joe and Mika, that there will be a complete distinction and separation, no ambiguity about business holdings. They will have to separate themselves completely from these vast, considerable business holdings.
Now, some Democrats have responded to the postponement, saying the soon-to-be president's conflicts of interest are unprecedented and require immediate resolution. My next guest is one of those Democrats. He's Congressman Gerald Nadler, a senior member of the House Judiciary Committee, who represents the southern portion of Morningside Heights, the west sides of Uptown, Midtown, and Lower Manhattan, as well as parts of Brooklyn down to Bensonhurst and Borough Park. He's calling for his fellow Democrats to refuse to move forward with confirmations of Trump nominees until the president-elect releases his tax returns and fully answers questions regarding his conflicts of interest in business. Congressman Nadler, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
What standard exactly are you trying to establish?
Well, we're not trying to establish any standard. We're trying to enforce the standard that every president for God knows how many decades has adhered to. It's always been taken for granted, number one, for the last 40 years, that a president or presidential candidate reveals his tax returns, so you know what kind of business entanglements and perhaps conflicts of interest he has and can insist that he get rid of them. And second, that a president divests himself of all business entanglements that might be a conflict of interest. Now, we know that Mr. Trump has his whole business is all of these hotels, all kinds of things, golf courses, all kinds of things in foreign countries make him subject to the influence or the pressure of foreign governments, not to mention other private interests, are huge conflicts of interest. And there's only one thing that he can do that has always been considered standard, and that is divest himself. Have a blind trust. And by that, we mean not have his children run it, because then he still knows that it's his. He still knows what influence a foreign government may have by doing something that helps the value of a Trump hotel or hurts the value of a Trump hotel or a golf course or whatever.
So in that clip that we played of Kellyanne Conway, and her language was there will be a complete separation, no ambiguity about business holdings. They will have to separate themselves completely from these vast and several business holdings. Is that reassuring?
No, because they lie all the time. Mr. Trump told us we would see his tax returns repeatedly. We haven't.
When the IRS finished the audit. Can't the IRS finish the audit?
First of all, we don't even know that there is an audit. He has never showed us an audit letter. So we don't even know if there is an audit. He told us within 2 weeks that Melania would hold a press conference to straighten out all the questions raised about her immigration status when she came here to start working. That never happened. First of all, he was going to release his tax returns. Then he was going to release it when the perhaps non-existent audit finished. And there's nothing that says you can't release the tax returns under audit, by the
right.
way.
Could the IRS release a statement? Is there anything preventing the IRS from releasing a statement, either confirming that an audit is underway or confirming that it's been concluded?
I think as a matter of privacy, the IRS never says things like that. But the taxpayer, Mr. Trump certainly could say it. And they give him an audit letter. If he is indeed under audit, they would give him a letter saying so. He should show it to us. All it says is I'm under audit. He has said he's under audit, but he's never shown that.
And
But simply saying these things, and he has said various things that he'd have his kids run the business. He knows his kids. He speaks to them, presumably. The only thing that's adequate is what has been always considered the only thing that's adequate. You take all of your assets, your business assets, you sell them, you convert them into liquid assets, and then you take those liquid assets, cash or whatever, and have somebody invest them in a blind trust.
But to
anything
the,
short of that.
So to the extent that his kids are, and he are in the same business, they also have to divest themselves because and put them in a blind trust
no,
or whatever
they
because
don't
their father is
no,
president?
No, no, no. They don't have to do that as long as they are doing nothing in government. Of course, when some of them are sitting in on meetings with the Japanese prime minister or other people, that's a direct conflict of interest unless they divest of everything. So, no, that is not the issue. The issue is he's got to divest of everything. And a blind trust means that somebody is running his money.
Right.
But in a way that he doesn't know. When you see a Trump Tower, unless you know that he doesn't that doesn't belong to him and it has no relationship to anymore, he knows what that is. And if someone wants to build a huge competing hotel across the street, he has to know that that's going to affect it and that the permit to let that happen or not that – let that happen is going to affect it.
Congressman Gerald Nadler, my guest. Could take a few questions for him. 212-433-WNYC. It can be on this specific thing that we're talking about now or anything else pertaining maybe to being a Democrat in the new coming world in Washington. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. I want to ask you about the newest wrinkle in the conflict of interest question, which is that apparently there's talk that his son, I guess Don Jr., will have – is Don Jr. or Eric? I forget. Will have an office – no, I'm sorry. It's Jared Kushner might have an office in the West Wing, his son-in-law. And the question of whether that runs afoul of anti-nepotism laws, here's Kellyanne Conway on that today on Morning Joe.
The anti-nepotism law apparently has an exception if you want to work in the West Wing because the president is able to appoint his own staff. So, of course, this came about and to stop maybe family members serving on the cabinet.
Right.
But the
right.
president does have discretion to choose a staff of his liking.
Do you have any issue with that?
Yeah, I do. Now, I'm not an expert on that law, but I know that not just the president, but any member of – if I am not permitted to hire a member of my family. I am permitted to have them work as a volunteer in my office.
Which might be the case here.
Okay. But in that case, he is subject, Donald Jr., would be subject to all the conflict of interest statutes, and he'd
right.
have to
I guess
divest.
It's Jared Kushner, right?
All right. It's Jared. Whoever it is, he would have to divest and disclose everything. I mean, to have members of your family who, working in the White House, members who have an interest in your businesses or in businesses allied to your businesses is completely completely corrupt.
What about Ivanka in that respect? If she is going to take the office of the First Lady, I gather, for the time that Melania is still in New York with their son and perform some First Lady-type functions?
Well, First Lady-type functions, I don't know. I haven't really thought about that. But anything, if she's sitting in a meeting with the Japanese prime minister and they're clearly business interests that she has in Japan,
right?
Then that's completely completely illegal also.
But
again, I'm not only concerned with the legal technicalities here.
Mm-hmm.
There are reasons for these laws.
Mm-hmm.
We want the president and we want the public to be confident that the president is looking out for what he sees as the best interests of the country only, and that he doesn't have even in the back of his mind, how does this affect my business or Ivanka's business? I mean, we see foreign governments. You saw the Turkish government just arrested one of the business partners of the president-elect with an obvious goal of blackmailing the president in terms of the extradition of cleric, whose name I forget.
So is the only concern here that they may make money in a way that it's a little unseemly, or are you concerned about aspects of U.S. government policy that might be compromised, which would be a bigger thing?
The latter. I am very concerned, and I think we all ought to be very concerned about compromising U.S. policy. I mean, when you saw the president-elect talk to the head of a British political party about the location of wind turbines near a golf course that he possesses, well, that's a foreign relations. When you see the Turkish government,
he admitted he did that.
Yeah, when you see the Turkish government apply pressure to the president-elect to extradite someone that they don't like as a political dissident, that's now maybe this person should be expedited or not. I don't know, but you cannot have it done with suspicion that it was done for private for purposes.
How much does
all of this is why we have these laws about public officials, to make sure that your loyalty is to the United States only and not to anything else.
How much does transparency make this not potentially as bad? For example, another issue, this was one of his sons yesterday, and forgive me, I forget whether Don Jr. or Eric, at the meeting with the leaders of the tech companies yesterday from Apple and Facebook and all of those, who, of course, the son is involved with Donald Trump's actual business. And people raise questions, why is he in this meeting with business leaders about government policy? And Kellyanne Conway this morning on MSNBC said this about that.
I find all this hand-wringing over who was in that meeting yesterday to be really over the top. The meeting was so transparent. You've seen clip after clip, excerpt after excerpt. It's all been reported this morning. It was quite transparent and open. There was nothing secretive about it. And these are adults who have a great deal to offer to the conversation.
The issue is not simply transparency. The transparency is a sine qua non. It's the foundation. But the fact is, by his presence there, the president is telegraphing to these people, all the big tech people who are very immensely powerful business people, that the business interests of my son or son-in-law, whoever it was, is of great interest to me, so you better take care of him. And if they didn't get that, if he didn't mean to transmit that message, they got that message anyway. And that is totally wrong. You cannot have a situation where the president and his family are seen to be double dealing, are seen to be dealing on their own behalfs as well as on behalf of the country. That's why we have all these laws. And frankly, that's why you have the Emoluments Clause of the Constitution, which I'm sure you've discussed already, but that only refers to foreigners. The Turkish government blackmails the president by arresting his business partner, if he grants the extradition, or if they don't execute or imprison his partner, that could be seen as a payoff to the president, an emolument. That's illegal.
Mm-hmm. You want to do the emolument clause in 15 seconds?
It says very simple. No foreign state, prince, potentate, etc., shall give anything to the president. No gifts to the president. But what's a gift? A gift is any action that could be taken for his personal benefit, whether it's a gift of a rocking chair, you know, in the old days, or something much more real today. The president, if he doesn't divest of his interests by the time he takes office, is going to be immediately a walking violation all the time of the Emoluments Clause. And that would have to raise the question of Congress doing something about that.
Terry in Mendham on what Congress might do about it. Terry, you're on WNYC with Congressman Gerald Nadler. Hi.
Hi. I had a question about whether Congress, the congressional committees, could use their subpoena power to get Donald Trump to compel him to give his taxes, his tax returns. That's my first question. The second question is whether there would be an insider trader issue for Trump's children under the Stock Act or other acts. Those are my questions. Thanks.
They're interesting questions. The first question is, I'm not sure. They probably could use a subpoena power, but that could be tied up in court for years. So I don't know that would be effective. Whether it violates the Stock Act? I don't know. I'm not familiar with that.
She asked, could Congress use its subpoena power to get the tax returns out in a more general way?
Let me say, we would have to show, to use a subpoena power, we'd have to show a legitimate reason for Congress seeing it. And that legitimate reason would be subject to challenge in court, which could go on for years.
So on a more general basis, what powers will the Democrats have as the minority in the House, the minority in the Senate, to push anything like this?
Well, the power that any minority has in the House and Senate is twofold. Number one, you can raise the issue, you can embarrass the majority, you can appeal to the consciences. There are consciences among some in the majority, and to the public, and raise public pressure. The second thing is, especially in the Senate, much more so than in the House, you can use the power to block things. You do have the power to block things, to filibuster, threaten filibuster. There are a lot of different procedural ways you can slow things down, and you can throw a lot of monkey wrenches into all kinds of things to get certain things. Whether those things are sufficient, depends on how determined the Republicans are to oppose something. Now, again, we're talking about things that were taken for granted that every presidential candidate, every president does, and the fact that this one isn't is an outrage. And I hope that Republicans as well as Democrats will see that the country cannot do very well if there is real suspicion and increasing suspicion that the president is looking out for his own private gain or his family's gain or anything other than the welfare of the country.
Here's Noreen in your district, I think, on the Upper West Side. You're on WNYC. Noreen, hi.
Yes, good morning. I would like to know, you know, the airwaves, the papers, radio, everywhere is filled with all of Trump's transgressions and the fact that he seems to be, pardon the expression, giving his finger to everything that everyone has worked so hard for over these years. I mean, the divesting of his business, the taxes, the Taiwan-China thing, the people, his own people in the White House. Nobody seems to be addressing the fact, or is there a way to put pressure on the Electoral College, which is really, to me, the whole issue here. I mean, Trump is going to say he'll do this, he'll do that, he'll do the other thing. He's already proved that he won't. He backs up on everything he says. And as you pointed out, Mr. Nadler, you know, some of these things that, you know, people could start subpoenaing him for or doing this or that will take years. And what damage can he do to the country in 4 years is a lot.
Are you comfortable with this? Do you really want to give up who the voters thought they were voting for with the electors just as a rubber stamp and start to give them individual judgment? Are you ready for this when the shoe is on the other foot?
I'm ready to see the popular vote honored. Hillary Clinton won by, what, 2 million votes? I'm ready to see that happen. And that's what the Electoral College is standing in the way of.
Noreen, thank you very much. Of course, they weren't. The Trump campaign will make the case, and probably legitimately, that they weren't running for a popular vote win. It would have been an entirely different campaign. They were running both sides for an electoral vote win.
Well, the fact is that the law is what it is, has been for a long time. I think the Electoral College is a 7th or an 18th century relic and ought to be done away with, but that's a different discussion. It is the law. The Electoral College is going to meet on Monday. Actually, the college doesn't meet on Monday. The parts of the college meet in the 50 state capitals. They never meet together.
That's right.
On Monday. And they're going to elect Donald Trump unless a lot of Republican electors, not Democratic electors, unless a lot of Republican electors violate their pledge and change. They're going to elect. It's inconceivable to me that would happen. He's going to be elected. And you raise a good point. We shouldn't be encouraging the Electoral College to exercise its own will because that's even more undemocratic. What we ought to be discussing is how do we retaliate, and I mean retaliate, against the Russians for trying to steal an election. I feel as if this election has been stolen twice, once by the FBI and once by the Russians. Both are intolerable, and we have to make sure that doesn't happen. We have to make sure that Russia pays a price for this. I don't know what kind of price, but we cannot just let them get away with it.
What some of the electors are trying to ask for is a briefing on the extent to which Russia influenced the election with more of the classified material that's not being released to the public and Trump's possible involvement, if there was any.
Well, if there was any, look. So far, the electors, I suppose if they want a briefing, they can have a briefing, but so far, what we know is that the Russians apparently deliberately stole information, disseminated it in the most damaging possible way to Hillary Clinton. Instead of dumping it all at one time, they dribbled it out, or they dribbled it out through WikiLeaks, had probably a real effect on the election, and did it with the intent either of mucking up our election or of deliberately helping Trump and hurting Hillary. I think the latter. And that's terrible, and we have to make sure they don't do that again and nobody else does it again. But secondly, if it were to turn out that Trump in any way cooperated with them or knew about this, then we would have to say that he had invalidated the election, and we'd have to go straight to impeachment.
Fred in Flushing, you're on WNYC with Congressman Nadler. Hi, Fred.
Thanks, Brian. The congressman just mentioned the I word, and that's what I called about. This guy, when I say this guy, I mean Trump. He's been lying to the public, I mean, since the primaries, and now he's bordering on like illegal actions by, like, you know, using the financial entanglements. If he doesn't release his tax returns, And most likely he won't, because, you know, he's the kind of guy where he does what he wants to do, irregardless. If he doesn't do that, how would the Congress know if he's divesting himself, if you don't know what it is that he owns?
Fred, I'm going to leave it there for time, but he wants to know what would be impeachable here. And you said before, Congressman, that under the circumstances that may come to pass, Trump would be, as president, in violation of the Emoluments Clause of the Constitution. If he's in violation of the Constitution, is somebody going to start impeachment proceedings?
Well, I don't know if someone's going to, but the fact is it is an impeachable offense to act in such a way as to draw the structure or function of the government into question or to damage fundamental liberty. I mean, that's what the impeachment clause was designed. That's why I thought that whatever President Clinton may have done, it had nothing to do with that, which is why it wasn't impeachable. But if President-elect Trump conducts himself in such a way that he raises real questions about violating the Emoluments Clause, which is to say being influenced by foreign powers, which is the real point, conducting his office in such a way as to help or hinder foreign powers, not for public purposes but for private purposes, then you have to consider something like impeachment, because that's the only remedy and that's why it's there.
But that sounds like it would have to be a lot more than doing a divestiture to his children or something like that that didn't satisfy you.
Well,
you would have to demonstrate that there was some kind of influence that was actually in real life corrupting of U.S. government policy, right?
I would think you'd have to show some influence, although you might if take this Gulen situation. The Turks arrest a business associate of Trump, alleging that he's somehow associated with this imam who's living in Pennsylvania. They are demanding that the imam be extradited, and certainly if the imam were extradited after the current administration said no, you then say, hey, wait a minute, was this done because they reconsidered the extradition law? Was this done because of a private blackmail? And that to avoid precisely those kinds of situations is why there should be divestiture.
Last question, and we just have 1 minute left. It's starting to look like, of all the nominees for cabinet posts, Rex Tillerson might get the roughest ride in the Senate because of Exxon conflicts of interest with Russia. I think you would rather see, if they have to pick their battles, the Democrats in the Senate, I think you would rather see Jeff Sessions get that ride. Is that right?
Well, no. Jeff Sessions ought to be closely questioned and looked into in his attitudes on civil rights, et cetera, but so should Tillerson on his attitudes. I mean, you can't have a situation where if the president-elect were to appoint two completely intolerable people for different reasons, you can only give one a proper examination. No, Tillerson, for his ties with the Russians and his basic attitudes on foreign policy, and Sessions for his basic attitude on one of his chief areas of concentration as Attorney General, which is civil rights enforcement, where he seems to be anti-civil rights enforcement.
Congressman Gerald Nadler from Manhattan and Brooklyn, thank you very much.
Thank you.